To have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, we set aside the first Thursday of every month to talk about consumer issues and problems. And today we'll talk about things like utility fraud, tax scams. We'll talk about the new Medicare card that's coming out and a whole lot more. Back with us once again, Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle, thanks for joining us once again.
Oh, it's always great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Jared Albrecht back with us as well, Senior Communications Specialist within the department. And Jared, great to see you again as well. I'll turn your microphone on. And
good morning, Larry. There we go.
Now we've got you. Tell you what, the lines are open for your questions and concerns about all kinds of consumer protection issues. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us at L. Mueller Show if you'd like to do that. Love to hear from you. The Federal Trade Commission just released the 2017 data on scams and dollar amounts connected with them, Michelle, and it's kind of sad to see some of those numbers.
It certainly is, Larry. It certainly is. And we need to remember that these are the national numbers. So these aren't just what's happening in Wisconsin. This is what's happening across the nation. But we use this report to really look at it in comparison to what's happening here and see if, you know, we're an odd duck or if we're just in line with everything else. And things are aligning as we've been talking about over the last year. And so to start with, the Federal Trade Commission, our national partner, received 2.7 million reports from individuals about, you know, the attempt to be scammed or that they were scammed or identity theft related. But 1.1 million of those reports were related to fraud. And as you said just a little while ago, that there was a total of $905 million in losses. And that median loss that people experienced was $429.
Oh,
so very significant information. But what seemed a little fascinating to us is that it was more younger people reporting losses to fraud than older people.
I saw that and I thought, man, you'd think it'd just be the opposite.
Absolutely. Seniors are targeted. But what we're not sure of is if the seniors were targeting them and were aware, and so they just hung up and they report more fraud than the younger generation, than the millennial generation. So when you just look at reports without losses, the seniors far outweigh the millennials. But when we look at the reports that contain losses, the millennials more frequently, 40% more of the losses were of the millennials at 20 to 29, then the seniors only had 18% of the losses. But what the other factor is when there was a loss, the amount of loss was smaller for that younger generation. They on the medium on the average would lose that $400 per loss, whereas 70 to 79 year olds it was $621 per loss, and then the 80 plus was more than $1,000 per loss. So that lines up for us in the way that seniors are targeted, because in essence there's more there to lose. I mean, that's one of the theories behind why seniors, there's that nest egg available for the get, and so then they're targeted. But just some fascinating information, but it also says, okay, we need to be sure that we are still focusing in training our younger generations about the marketplace and all these scam artists that are out there, and be passing that message along.
Yeah. I was thinking about the new Medicare cards. I think here in Wisconsin, sometime in June, where they're supposed to start sending them out. And you can just imagine there's going to be some scammers out there trying to pull a fast one on people.
Absolutely. So nationwide, starting in April, they're rolling out the new cards. But yes, Wisconsin's not targeted to start their rollout until June. And that could end up being delayed. But right now, that's when we're slated to start with the rollout for us. But we need everyone to remember it's an automatic process. you don't have to fill out an application. You don't have to do anything but make sure your address is up to date. I mean, if you're getting your regular mail regarding Medicare, you're going to get your card. And this card will not contain your Social Security number. It's a random generated number. And so don't, once you get your new card, destroy your old card, because it has your Social Security number on it. But you don't have to fill out anything. You don't have to pay for anything. You don't have to respond to any phone calls about it. It's just going to happen. So all those are signs and indicators that anything else that happens could have the big old scam written all over it, and don't fall for any of those types of solicitations.
You can imagine people calling and saying, well, in order to get your card, you're going to have to send us $25 or whatever.
Or verify your Social Security number.
Verify your number. That's even worse.
Right. Don't do it.
Well, let's take some calls. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Martha in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling. Martha, are you there?
I'm here.
Are you? Oh, there you go. Got you now. Thank you, Martha.
Sir, I think I found a scam. I mail in my credit card payment, and I get slapped with a late fee, and they jack my interest rate to 29% because they claim it took 12 days for my check to get there from Menominee, Wisconsin to Arizona. So I called them and I said, I don't think so. I don't think it takes that long. They said, oh yeah, that's how long it takes. So I went on this website, Ripoff Reports, and people have been reporting that this from the credit card companies that they say this, and then people get late fees. Well, I outed them on Facebook. And so in 20 minutes, I had a reply, and they said, well, we want to help you with this problem. But it seems to me that this is disparaging the USPS. They should have a dog in this fight. There's no way to prove that they didn't get my check in time. So I've been mailing it in by certified mail, and I haven't had a problem. They did remove the late fee because I threatened to expose this scam. And I'm just wondering, what's to stop them from just keeping to do this?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have family members in Arizona, and when I send a letter out there, usually at least once a month, and I come to find out it takes about 3 days.
Yeah. I think normal mail, we always, you know, that 2 day, depending on where it's going, 3 to 5. But
yeah,
credit cards, depending upon how it's issued, are regulated by the Comptroller of Currency, the U.S. Comptroller of Currency, or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB. So if she filed a complaint with us, we would forward it to one of those agencies. But they're heavily regulated, and they're always watching for equality in interest rates and what those can be in applications of late fees versus disclosures of information regarding those fees and how they're applied. And I believe they're audited regularly as well. So if there's concern, and this is a repetitive thing that's happening for her, I think filing a complaint and us helping assist get it to the right location would be the right thing to do, so they can be checking in on that.
Yeah, for sure. And well, for filing a complaint with you, you've got an 800 number. Mm-hmm. What's the 800 number?
So that's 1-800-422-7128. Or if it's easier, go online. All our forms are there to either be printed, or you can file directly online at datcp.wi.gov. And that was our department initials, datcp.wi.gov.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Martha, for bringing that up. I really appreciate it. I want to give some others a chance to chime in here. Marta in Milwaukee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Marta.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wondered how we can prevent things like, I was on my computer the other day and the screen popped up that said I had a horrible virus. They didn't use that word. They said I had a virus and I should call this 1-800 number immediately And I called the 1-800 number, and we went through many different things that they had to say. And finally, at the end, they said, we only charge $199 for this service.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if there was some way we could block on our computer so that things would not come like that.
Yeah, okay. Jared, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I can try. There are some browser extensions available with if you're using Firefox or Google Chrome or possibly even Internet Explorer that'll give you an option of blocking pop-ups. One thing she mentioned in this is that they came in as a pop-up, and I know from a family relative who had the same problem with this, hers came in as a pop-up as well. So it's possible that a pop-up blocker that's built into your internet browser in the settings, you could turn it on or off, might be able to stop these. But this is a type of scam we talk about a lot on this show, and really information and educating the public about it is the best way to go.
Yeah.
It was nice to hear that she balked at that price, the $199, because certainly we know from history here that $199 wasn't going to get her anything. And if it was going to get her anything, it was going to get someone snooping around in her computer files or potentially loading malware onto her computer remotely. So, you know, the more people who know that this type of thing is out there and know to avoid it, that's really right now the best tool that we have.
So for her, if she goes to settings on her computer and there's something in there that I don't know if it says pop-up blocker or it might, I think it does say that.
Or ad block, or there's a number of different types of services out there, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes it can be in the properties. You know, if she's within the program itself, it might be within the properties portion versus the computer settings overall. You might have a couple different layers that you can be doing this with, and it's just going to depend on her system and configuration of things
settings
as well.
And or properties are the places.
And it's worth noting while we're on the subject that, as we've discussed before, these also come in as phone calls. Pop-ups isn't the only way that we get these reports. People get calls out of the blue about a virus on their computer, and again, it's a scam. Watch out for that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck. Thank you so much, Marta, for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Warren in Baraboo, I think, up next. Hi, Warren. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Similar to the last call, I got the pop-up screen yesterday on the screen from a company called NTS, ItCare. And I went a step farther and said I'd pay. And wondering if there's any
way to get the money back?
Yeah. Right.
So a couple things that I would encourage Warren to do. File a complaint with us, because one of the things that we can do with these is track money. It's easier to track money than it is phone numbers or pop-up electronics. So if he would file a complaint with us. The other thing is if he used a credit card, contact the credit card company so then he can work on filing a dispute. And then third is if he actually gave any kind of access to his computer, any remote access, going to want to clean the computer, check, run any antivirus software that he already owns and has, and maybe seek an expert to also do a little advanced digging to make sure nothing more was loaded onto the system. And then I'd be, depending upon what information is stored on the computer and how it's used, you also may want to get into checking your credit report to be sure that there's no identity theft or financial theft that happens. I mean, it's many layers of things that may need to be done here for Warren.
Yeah, lots of things. And to file a complaint, and again, you can call Warren, you can call 800-422-7128, or just do it online at datcp.wi.gov.
Right, absolutely. That would be how. And given that the computer was used, you might want to call on this one versus filing the complaint online because of what he may share with us until he gets his computer checked out if he gave any access there.
Well, hopefully he did it by a credit card.
Payment-wise, yes. Hopefully we paid by credit card, but I worry that there's some remote access that was given.
Yeah.
So,
at least with a credit card, you can go to the back of the card, call the 800 number and tell them what happened, and you can... hopefully that will help as well.
Right. And one thing why it's so important to be filing those complaints is we, you know, work with our federal partners and everything. And there is $10 million in refunds to victims of a tech support scam coming from a settlement that the Federal Trade Commission had with one of these tech support companies. And I'm using my air quotes there. Mm-hmm. But these were services from inbound call experts, or also known as advanced tech support at the time. But they've just recently announced that they're ready to roll out those refunds. And the FTC will be working on the eligibility and contacting and sending out that information, but there come results, and so Warren's complaint will be very valuable to receive for whomever's doing this next.
Warren, good luck, and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht, our guests today from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scam issues today with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them along. And if you think you've been scammed, or maybe you have a question about tax ID theft, for example, whatever the question, you can call us at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. You can post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. I'd love to hear from you. Also, tweet us at Al Mueller Show. Let's go back to the phones and to David in Rock Springs next. David, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for letting me on. I was Saturday night, I had two withdrawals from my checking account. They were unauthorized. The only reason I recognized them was I just, for some reason, I was checking my bank statement. And there were two identical $300 withdrawals off of this card, which I didn't even have the card with me all day, but it happened that evening. And no one else had access to the card. I did report it to the bank and to Google because it was withdrawn by an app called Google Wallet, which I don't even have on my phone. So I think I did the right thing to report it to both of these entities, but my question is, how do you get scammed by an app that's not even on your phone and it gets access to your account?
Yeah, and I assume that they killed that credit card, the debit card, the bank. Yeah, okay. Michelle, what do you think? How does that happen?
Well, one potential, one thing that comes to mind kind of immediately is a potential skimming situation. And what I mean by that, a skimmer, is that that would be a card reader that's in place where you would be using your card on your own. So it could be at an unattended gas pump. It could be at an ATM machine. We've seen skimmers at other auto pay type situations.
Grocery stores,
yeah, perfect. In Europe, you could see them at terminals for public transportation to buy your tickets. But those places, and it's this small device that's put over, it's an overlay, and so you don't even really know it's there. Or now there's ones that are internal in cabinets and that are read by Bluetooth monitoring and stuff. So they're a little bit more complicated in hooking them up. But that card, that skimmer is sitting there reading card information. And then these thieves are then taking that and either putting that information on copy, duplicate white credit cards that they'll wait and sell and use later and test at oftentimes gas pumps for low value kind of situation. Or they sit there and then we'll use them electronically and set it up on someone's phone. And, there we go. We have it on a Google Wallet and someone's just shopping away because they're doing some tests to make sure they got all the information. It'll work. So my best bet there is that it was some kind of credit card theft, likely a skimmer.
Yeah, likely a skimmer. There you go, David. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Jake in Sauk County, it's your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I had an incident about a month ago where I got a call on my phone, and it was a man, he said hello, and he hung up. And about 3 minutes later, the same number called me back and asked, he basically did the same thing and hung up. So I called the number back, and a woman answered, and it was a repair shop in Eau Claire. And she said that their number had been used in scams lately or whatever. I don't know if they spooked or what. So she wasn't the one that made the calls before. And I was just wondering what the incentive for somebody to, with the scam or what they're doing when they're calling like that. Or if that's common.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty common, Jared.
Yeah, it sounds like spoofing where they're using a local number to add legitimacy to the call. And then it sounds to me like potentially a harvesting operation, trying to find live numbers of people who will pick up the call and take it.
So in that case, Jake's number now may be on a list.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jake could end up being on a list because he answered. So it indicates that there's a list of, okay, a live body who will entertain a call. It could also be a situation when he said hello, but no one was there. It could be an auto dialer that was being used and dialing multiple numbers at once, and whoever responds first is going to get the robocall or whomever is there and engaging in the scam or the solicitation, and he was always potentially second. Mm. So it never clicked and engaged for him, but that's why it's repeat dialing, because they'll wait till they connect that call as well. So there's a couple different possibilities, but I don't think any of them end in a good place in that situation there.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's been no further calls or anything within a month here, so I just thought it was kind of odd that.
Yeah.
Well, sure. And that could be a sign, too, because sometimes they route through an area code type situation, and then they'll move on to the next area based on the cards that they're buying and the locations and how their auto dialer's working. So the fact that you got the two calls, but then they could just be kind of moving on to the next location is the way I think of it, because our area codes are kind of location based, but they're just going through the next number sets.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. Well, even during the show here, I got a call that my Hiya app said is a scam, and it's a number that's similar to my the local number. So.
And that Hiya app, I mean, that's something that consumers can use. There are many different options out there, but an app to help assist and block calls and prevent them from going through, but then mark them as scams. Landlines, you can report and buy devices to hook up or talk to your carrier to see what they're doing to help block some of these scam numbers. And voice over internet, the VoIP options, they have, Nomo, Robo, and some other options as well to help assist with these blacklist numbers that scam artists are using to help minimize these interruptions.
All right. Let's take another call. Diana in Madison up next. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I have had many experiences with credit card fraud, and for the last several years, I have just learned that when I get a report from my credit card company, either by email or on my phone, I immediately get in touch with them, and the response has been really, wonderful, and they get back to me quickly, and I haven't lost any money for the last several years because I have just really learned to respond fast and do what they say. And I have also had a couple of disputed purchases, and they have taken those on. And sometimes they're actually very apologetic because I've had to get new cards, you know, many times, because if there's an alert, you know, that's it for the card you're using. But it's a small price to pay for the, you know, $400 or $500 you could have lost. And I have two 20-something daughters, and have shared that with them. And so they also now, you know, they didn't want to call because it seemed like, you know, why call? What's going to be done? But I have shared my experiences. And so they have now gotten used to calling very quickly and to get the ball rolling, so to speak, as far as the credit card company taking it on. And they do. It's really kind of amazing.
Yeah. Well, I've had the same experience, Diana, a couple of times where I've had to have the card changed, but and my experience with my credit card company was absolutely wonderful. You're absolutely right. Call right away, don't you, Michelle?
Absolutely. I mean, I want to thank her for sharing that, because she's monitoring her information. She's monitoring it in a very timely manner and then acting on it. So that's fabulous advice, and it's the recommendation we make, and then she's training her kids to do the same thing, because we just learned those millennials, you know, more victims of fraud than others. So it's really important. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana. Lynn in Eau Claire, let's go to you next. Lynn, hi.
Hi, Larry. I have been waiting for this. I just turned 63, so I guess somebody thinks I'm ripe for the picking. I have gotten numerous, it looks very intimidating and official. It's a vehicle document alert notice. There's a bogus bill on the back for almost $13,000 to my Cadillac that I paid less than half of that for, so I'm not going to be, you know, it's totally bogus, and it's just, it's very frightening if you don't read the whole thing. And I've already told these people I was going to call you, so I had to go through, because I can see people like my mother-in-law responding to this. There's must respond, call now. And all they want to do is you will be responsible, bear financial responsibility, bear the burden for all these, you know, made-up automobile repairs. And anyway, somebody needs to be stopping these folks.
Yeah. Wish we could. There's, you can have, you know, take a shot at it. You always need help, though, Michelle.
We sure do. And this is one I would really like to see. So I'm hoping she'll file a complaint and mail it in to us in whatever copies she has. Because we have been focusing for, you know, the last year and gotten lots of reports about the extended auto warranty mailers that have been out there that are mailers that entice consumers to urgently act on an auto warranty that's due to expire. And so that they often don't even own the car anymore. But in this case, there's a bill attached and repairs. So it's a different focus now. And I'd really like her to file a complaint so we can take a look at that.
Yeah. So I hope you can do that. Lynn, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, here's Adam and Marquezan next with a question or comment. Hi, Adam.
Hi. I have more of a concern. When my company I work for, I was able to enroll in the 401k, I had to go online and register, and the way they set it up, my username was my date of birth, and the password was my social security number. And I guess my concern is all that information is out there that I usually try to keep pretty well secret.
Yeah.
And now I changed it, but I was wondering if there's a way to prevent them from, I don't know, or checking to see if they use my information or.
Yeah. Okay. So Adam's worried that the fact that he put his social security number out there. He did change the password to a new password, but, you know, it was still out there for a time anyway.
Yeah, and with the financial world and aspects, in order to open particular accounts and then how it ties into terrorism and things, I mean, you need to hand over that social number and date of birth so they can be monitoring and checking that type of transactions as it relates to things. So, and the employer already has the information as part of the employment, and what would be a problem in this situation is what device are we using and how secure is it to transmit it? You know, how is it monitored? And then if someone didn't change that, you know, to be using that as password and username. But he's certainly corrected already the initial setup stage of things. And that somewhat, I've seen that happen before because it's all tied into opening the account anyway. So hopefully he was on a secure system when he did that, a work network that's really well set up or his home device.
And you can always, you know, it doesn't hurt to go and check your credit report, see if there's anything unusual on the credit report.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's always good advice to be regularly monitoring that.
Yeah. All right. Good luck. Thank you so much, Adam, for calling. And here's one we haven't had before. Kenneth in Janesville asks, why do we buy strawberries and blueberries by the quart or pint in Wisconsin instead of by weight? Aren't we being ripped off? Now, Weights and Measures handles that within our state government, but any comment?
Well, you're absolutely right. The Bureau of Weights and Measures, which is actually part of the division that we're located in, handles that. And there are specific regulations as to how certain types of foods can be sold, whether it be by weight or whether it be by measurement. I mean, both of those being a form of measurement, but that certain things, whether or not they're sold as ready to eat or whether they're sold as bulk and package or just produce items. And it actually, some of it's in our state regulations and some goes back to national standards that are set in place for sales. So that's as deep as I can go. But any further questions, you can call our 800 number and we'll transfer you over to Weights and Measures. And then there's lots of information on our website about that as well that they can access and look at.
At the Department of Ag.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wisconsin Department of Ag. Yeah. All right. Let's take another call. This time, Nancy in Mequonigo up next. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I'm calling due to the fact we were having a problem with our computer, who is our provider is CenturyTel.net. Well, anyway, after we got the computer working, then the printer wouldn't work. So we called the CenturyTel again, and they told us they didn't work with the printers. But they said we should go to Google and type in the name of the printer and the model number, which we did. Well, someone answered the phone, an 800 number, and we told him he wanted to, he said, yes, he was from our printer number, which is HP, and he could help us. Well, come to find out, after we gave him the information, he said, well, I have to do this and do that and something else. And he says, and then after a few more words, we decided something was kind of odd about this. So we said, thank you, we'll figure it out. Well, by that time, he then had our computer all infected. And we took it to our tech that works on our computer afterwards, and he tried to get it to come up, and it was dead. This person ruined our computer. So it no longer works. He couldn't get anything to come up. In this one phone call, which is only for a few minutes. Now, how can somebody, when you Google and print and type in this information, how can someone do this to your computer so quickly?
Yeah, it can happen in a very short time, can it, Michelle?
It sure can, and sorry for your experience there. So first things, you know, with the direction to go to Google and then you search for the printer and that. So one thing that scam artists do is they can purchase ads, they can purchase placement, but they impersonate big legitimate companies that that consumers frequent or will entice them for rewards or certificates or computer problems. And so likely the source that you went to was not the real printer manufacturer. It was an imposter who then directed you down this path. And then because you were engaged and they know enough to go through the conversation and then gain access to the computer. And then to hook up the printer, while all that's happening, they're really on the back end loading malware and viruses so they can continue to do harm to you instead of fixing the problem. So this is the tough part, is really making sure that you're dealing with the real company and how you source that information and verify who you're dealing with. And one way to do that in this case might have been to search the actual printer and gotten the instruction manual that would have been online and read through that, and then that manual would have included a phone number in it to call, type situation, versus the web ad. But it gets tough with, they're so good at impersonating.
Excuse me. Sometimes you can use your pointer, hover it over the address itself, can't you?
That's a source, and that works really well when you receive an email and that contains links, and then you want to see where those links are going to take you, and looking over the to from bar to see where something's from in an email. But when it's out on the Google in the fake, you want to really pay attention to the browser bar and see what that address is where it's taking you to, and is it really HP.com or Hewlett-Packard.com without any extra extension. And by the way, it's Lizzie and, you know, all sorts of extra things. Does it just end there? But that would be a lot more driving you deeper into the browser and the impersonation place.
Yeah.
Very sad these people are out there doing these things for other, and it's happened so quickly too.
Absolutely, yeah. Very fast. I mean, you're not alone. Over a million consumers last year nationally. So great job spotting it, you know, at that point and putting a stop to it.
Thank you, Nancy, for calling. Arnie, in Plainfield. Your turn now. Hi, Arnie.
Hi. I am interested in finding out what can be done. My wife received a call about a week ago from a woman who pretty much almost threatened her, said, "You stop calling me or I'm going to report you. This is a scam." And she got the call two or three times, and then finally it stopped. But in the meantime, my wife reported it to the do not call list. But I don't know if somebody was able to get her phone number and back dial it, or what was going on there. So
yeah, well, that could be a number of things.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, was your number being used, and then so someone was calling you back, or were you being solicited?
They claimed that
your number was calling them.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so that's that spoofing out there where someone is really calling from a different number, but making it appear as though it's yours. And boy, we've heard a lot of reports of that happening. What we've heard some consumers do is that they change their answering machine to say that we know our number is being used to make calls. So that way, when consumers call them back, they understand that it wasn't really you calling. It's always helpful to call consumer protection, because then we know when we get the complaints from the phone number that it wasn't really you making the phone calls. And then the other thing to do is just to contact your telecommunications provider to let them know your number's out there being spoofed. With the technology, it's very difficult to prevent or stop that person from doing that impersonation, but the little pieces you can do can become helpful.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Michelle Reinen, Jared Albrecht, our guests today from the Bureau of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scams today with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Question or comment, experience to share, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us as well at L. Mueller Show. And we'll move on to Sue in Wausau next. Sue, thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm calling because my brother passed away at the end of January of this year. And now over the weekend, I can't remember if it was on Saturday or Easter, the email came in and it went into spam, thank goodness. But it said his name at carolpress.sk. And then there was a little envelope, you know, that you were supposed to then open. And I went, okay, this is odd, because that's not his email. That wasn't his email address when he was still able to email. And I just thought, oh, I don't know. And then I called my sisters, but both of them said, oh, we never look at the spam. They just always dump it. They don't look what's coming in on spam. And I thought, well, I look at things because sometimes something good, you know, that something you wanted or were waiting for comes in there. And so, but I just thought, now how on earth would they know? Because it was sent to my email address. And I said, how would they know? Because my brother lived in Saco, Maine. He didn't live here.
Hmm. Jared?
Yeah, I mean, hacked email accounts are really common. And, you know, one thing that's nice is she's checking her email spam every now and then to make sure that good things aren't getting through there. So that's good. But if you check your spam box at any given day, you may find a couple of messages from someone you claim, you know, supposedly you know, but their accounts have been hacked. And, you know, I'm sorry to hear that this happened with her brother who just passed away in his name.
And there's ways. I mean, if your brother died in the state of Maine, Maine would have, there probably an obituary in some newspaper with the names of those people, relatives who were still living.
Yeah. And it could be, if you look at the email itself, that it has the name of the person, but the actual sender email address is something way off the mark, which is what she was alluding to in this case here.
Yeah.
So that was her first sign that this is a fake scam email.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so
much.
Yeah, good spotting. Thank you for calling. Richard in Ettrick, your turn. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Great show.
Thank you.
I had experienced this past week with a credit card hack. I received this letter in the mail. And it looked strange. There was no return address on the envelope. It was a plain type letter saying that my credit card had been compromised and to call this number. So immediately I thought, oh, okay, this is some kind of scam thing. So I called my credit union, and it turned out, yeah, my card had been, someone had tried to post a 94-cent charge. And I said, these phone numbers, they don't look like anything from the bank or, you know, and they said, oh, that's our fraud department. So it turned out it was a legitimate letter, but it certainly did not look like anything that came from a credit card company.
Yeah. Well, the thing to do in a situation like that is if you don't want to use that number, you still have the number of your bank.
Right.
Somewhere and call that one.
I mean, I really like that example and story. We weren't sure about the letter and its legitimacy, but we needed to question if something had really happened, because if it did, you need to take action. So flip the card over, call the number on the back of the card, go to your statement and call the number on that. Call the general number of the bank that issues the card. So there were a couple other sources, and they can then validate that, yeah, this happened by looking at the account. And, oh, yep, fraud department. So that's good. That's a good source number. You can use it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, Richard. Vicki and Merrill, your turn now. Hi, Vicki.
Hello, Larry. This is the situation. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am the parent. My daughter has a student loan out there, a massive one, and I'm co-signed on her student loan. Anyway, all is well, but she made her last payment, and she made it out of her checkbook but over the phone. And they took it out four times, which caused the checkbook to be overdrawn. Other payments she made, of course, were denied and all this kind of stuff, a huge mess. Then she contacted her bank. Her bank stopped the extra payments, so stopped that. Then she contacted the credit card, it's not a credit card. It's called City Card Student Loans. And anyway, they supposedly are checking in on this. Meanwhile, student loan people replaced all the money that was drawn out of her account, put it in her checking account, which she knows better than to try and use, because that doesn't belong to her. And the card, the city student loan people have said that they never received her payment. Well, she paid it, and they took it out four times. So, and meanwhile, they're looking into this. But we've talked to, I've gotten involved, she's gotten involved. We've all spent hours on the phone with supervisors. And supposedly they're looking into this. Meanwhile, I'm still getting the letters saying that, you know, that my daughter hasn't paid her bill and everything like that. And supposedly when I talked to the supervisor, that was, they were putting her into temporary where she doesn't make payments. And supposedly I wasn't supposed to get any more letters and she wasn't supposed to get any more letters. But it looks like nothing is being done. So is this something that I should report to this agency that we're talking about this morning?
Well, this is one of those situations where, yes, it is likely time to report it. It sounds like things are trying to be worked out, and sometimes catching the letters up with the actions that the representative done and yeah. one department talking to the other can not happen at the same time. We don't handle student loan consolidation. That's either regulated depending upon the who is managing the loan, either the Department of Financial Institutions or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But you can call our 800 number and they'll give you a referral phone number, or you can go online, file the complaint with us, and we'll refer that complaint and get it to the right agency. So 1-800-422-7128 and then okay. datcp.wi.gov is our website. But at this point, in my mind, it's important to file that complaint to kind of put it on record that you've gone through all these steps, you've taken this, you've been told these things to make sure that the debt or any interest or anything doesn't get messed up or compounded, because they say you should be in a holding pattern while this is going, but you don't want any kind of collections reporting or anything yeah. like that going on to impact a credit score. So that's why I would file the complaint, to just make sure it's very official and someone else is helping sort this out with you.
Okay. Will that negatively affect their ongoing process to help us out?
It shouldn't. I mean, no. Because one thing a government agency does is say, okay, we see this situation. What are you doing to correct it or fix it? Or, I mean, we have mediation, and then we also have enforcement with consumer protection. And, you know, so does CFPB and the U.S. branch of Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, as well as Department of Financial Institutions.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much for calling, Vicki. Sorry for all the troubles. Brent in Chippewa Falls will give you a chance. Hi, Brent.
Hi, guys. Just a note of curiosity. Come around, November, December of last year, I started getting Golf Digest magazine out of the blue. There's nothing on it except my address. I don't golf. Haven't golfed since I was about 19, just for fun, and I've gone back as far as, I would say, July or August when I first started getting it, to see if there were any charges or withdrawals from my bank account. I have only one credit card, by the way, and that was through my bank, and there were no charges on that either. I just randomly started getting Golf Digest magazine, and I haven't gotten any phone calls, and I know you guys have said, you know, one of your programs, you know, don't answer the phone and say yes, and the one where they try and trick you by saying they're having trouble and can you hear me now, that kind of business. I never do that. I always answer with some other thing. I've been told I sound angry, but I don't say yes and stuff like that. And I have absolutely no clue why I started getting it. And if you guys have any good ideas, I guess maybe call Golf Digest or see how I can get a hold of them. But if any words of wisdom on that, it'd be great. And I can take your comments off the air. That's fine.
All right. Thanks, Brent. One thing I would say just off the top of my head, and since you're not a golfer, haven't golfed for years, I do know that when someone subscribes to a magazine like Golf Magazine, often the subscriber will get, you can send a free subscription to a person, or for $5 you can, you know, give that person a subscription for a year. And I've actually done that. On a couple of instances. So that's a possibility, but usually then there's some notification too.
Right. No, that is exactly one of the things I was thinking of as well, Larry. It could also be some form of marketing where something else he purchased, they could have data that says, oh, people who get this are likely also in this market. Maybe we can entice them. And so they'll send a magazine with their ads type situation. And then you need to watch for that 1 year mark or that 6 year mark to see if a bill comes that to renew. Like, oh, I'm getting this magazine and you think you've ordered it, but now they'll get it at the renewal. So there's a, you know, 2, 3, 4 possibilities as to why it's coming. But I think he's right. If you kind of want to know the source and you this is going to bother you that you're getting it and you know that there's no bill outstanding for you, call the magazine themselves and ask about your subscription, you know, in quotes there to see what's going on.
And thanks again for calling. Sue in Sussex emailed to say that she had a geek squad try to fix her computer. They spent over 5 hours and didn't fix it. They then suggested she call Microsoft because her program was probably corrupted. Microsoft fixed it in 5 minutes. Should she be concerned about those 5 hours? Geek squad.
Well, it depends. I mean,
on the geek squad, I guess.
No, I mean, if she was with a legitimate company and business and there's a manager to talk to and she can question, I mean, she can certainly ask for an accounting of what was done and what was tried and try and dispute or argue the bill. But she initiated that contact. She did that research.
Okay.
It wasn't something she responded to from a pop-up or a solicitation. She took that initiative.
There we go. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can send, you can also tweet us at L. Mealer Show. Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht, our guests, we're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be right back. Stay with us. Taking a look at consumer scam issues today with our two guests. I'm Larry Mealer, by the way, Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guests. And we have an open line or two. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Diana in Middleton's employer sent out an email warning of a scammer pretending to be the Dane County Sheriff. People are being told that they missed jury duty and they had to pay $2,000 to avoid being held in contempt. The caller ID said Dane County Sheriff, and scammers were very assertive, Jared.
Yeah, that's your classic imposter scam. That's kind of a direct variant on the IRS scam that we've talked about a number of times on here, where someone calls you out of the blue, claims to be with an authority, saying that you owe money for back taxes, claiming that you owe money for fines to the court, any number of reasons. They're just going to try to scare you into paying it. So, yeah, this is a pretty clear-cut scam here.
Tim in Wales, Wisconsin, up next. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
About a month ago, I had an experience with an attempted credit card fraud. I received a notice from Equifax saying basically it was an alert. So I called them up right away. This was on the weekend. And they said somebody had applied for a Discover card, told me to call Discover card. You know, so I talked to them. They took them a day or two to kind of cancel things, given it was the weekend. But they did that, and then I called around to the other credit bureaus and put locks on everything. And I called the sheriff, too. I filled out a form, the consumer protection form, just so I could have reports, for the purpose of not having to pay a lot for the credit locks. But then a couple weeks later, I got a mail from the post office that said somebody had changed my address or submitted a form. And it turned out, it was connected all to the same thing. So I called them up right away. They put a stop on that. They couldn't tell me if any of my mail had actually been forwarded. And then I talked to my local post office. But, I would advise that that's an important step, if you get into this kind of thing where somebody's submitted a fraudulent request, is, go see your local postmaster and fill out a form or check with them to make sure nobody has done anything to change your address.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like something that's happened before. It sounds like an identity theft almost, doesn't it, Michelle?
Those are all very clear signs to me of identity theft. So first, someone trying to take out credit in his name using his information. And great, it sounds like he had a fraud alert on his account, so he was notified and could take action to stop it. That being the difference between a fraud alert and a security freeze locks it down and prevents it from happening, whereas a fraud alert on your credit report, they notify you, but then you need to follow and take that action if it's not really legitimate. And then the change of address. I mean, the Postal Service sends two of those out, one to the new address and one to the old address, because if it's not a legitimate change, the old address person's going to get it and then can take action. And so it's really important that they do that and that he got it and took action. But absolutely, the steps and clear signs of ID theft and all things that now he needs to be doing regular monitoring. He's locked down his credit and be checking that Social Security number to see if someone's using that for a job with the Social Security Administration. And we have all this on our website in an ID theft, what if it happens type kit. So he can go there and get some guidance or call us as well.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot, Tim. Sounds like you're on the right track for sure. And go to the website and take a look at that. There may be a couple things you could still do to help yourself in this situation. Thanks, Tim. On to Regina in Oconomowoc. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Over the past year, probably about three different times, I've gotten emails from PayPal, and it looks just like an email from PayPal that a certain amount has, or thank you for my purchase, or a certain amount has been charged, and it tells me how much it is. It almost seems like I can't remember. It even told me what it was or where it was ordered from or something like that. So I get worried, and then I check my PayPal account, and there's no charges.
Yeah. So somebody's trying to do something nefarious there, Jared?
Yeah, those are going to be fake emails. Kind of in line with when we talk about shipping emails, you get a fake email from FedEx or UPS claiming there's a problem with the shipment, and you go and you open the email, and all it is a link to find out more details. Well, that link's going to send you somewhere you don't want to go, and I think that's probably the same situation here with the PayPal emails. Two things I would probably suggest she may want to do, just for safety's sake. Possibly check credit report, make sure there's not anything going on there that's problematic, and change that password for PayPal, just for safety's sake. If it's been a while since she's done that, that may be something she wants to do. But yeah, these fake emails telling you you've made a purchase, you've got a shipment coming, there's a problem with your account, anything to get you to take an action in an email. This is real common right now from these, you know, supposedly from these major corporations we all know.
And on passwords, I've been reading and hearing that it's a good idea to use word combinations that don't mean anything, like rabbit.
Can't even think of one, can you?
Flower pot, words that don't go together that are hard to, apparently they're hard to, for a password breaker to break.
Right. You want to add to that. So if you did rabbit flower, you probably want to take the O in flower and change it to a zero, and take the E in flower and make it a three, and then maybe in rabbit the I, make that an exclamation point, because you want to get numbers, words, symbols, but you don't want true words in there. So other things are like passphrases. So take a phrase that you really like, and then take the first and last letter of each of those words in that phrase, and then add again a combination of symbols and letters to it as well. But the more complicated you can make it but still remember it, the better off you're going to be.
That's the problem, remembering.
Yeah, we think long and strong passwords. Well, long and strong.
On to Doug in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Doug, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How are you this fine, warm spring?
I'm cold. But happy to talk to you. What's on your mind?
The earlier caller you had with Citibank and all the trouble that she was having.
Yeah.
We went through the same thing, just a different type of loan, and they are next to impossible to get anything concrete from. We had to send registered letters and had someone sign for them because they weren't saying that they were receiving anything. And as far as the phone calls, you need to document the time, the person you talk to, and whenever possible, say, I'd like to talk to your supervisor. Because otherwise, you'll deal with this for months on end. And they keep switching people, and they're not entering your call into the system. So you need to, go that way. I mean, you shouldn't have to, but that's what we ought to do. And actually record calls as well and let them know this call is being recorded for our records. Then they usually step up a little bit because, the thumb is on them, so to speak. But, yeah, it was a nightmare working with them.
Yeah. You know, when you have those kinds of situations, Michelle, is it worth it to put in a complaint about it?
I think so. It sometimes adds a little accountability because they're working with another outside government agency in the process as well. Someone who's kind of monitoring and tracking responses and serving as the intermediary in the communication as well.
Yeah. Thanks for that call, Doug. Appreciate it very much. And we'll turn to Carl in Kenosha next. Carl, hello to you.
Yeah, hi. Corporations have got to be losing an awful lot of money to these scammers. Besides that, losing business because people don't want, or they're afraid to put business out there. Why don't the corporations put a small amount of their profits into a task force to fight the scammers? Or maybe they already do.
I know the credit card companies do, or at least mine does, has a very active in terms of dealing with issues that affect my credit card.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the telecommunication providers are working with the Federal Communications Commission and the Federal Trade Commission to try and combat the phone aspect of the scams. And then there's utility companies that are out there putting out promotional advertisements all the time. Well, not ads, but service pieces to make sure that they're helping with the education aspect. So I think in many respects, they are also trying to combat this for the same reasons that Carl mentioned.
Yeah. Thanks, Carl. Diana in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Diana.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am very cautious when it comes to credit cards, but things that come in the mail that look very fishy, like say something to do with Medicare, and you know darn well it didn't come from the federal government, or you won something, or these other things like the car, things that come out, all these type of things, I kind of save up and I put them in an envelope and I send them to my senator and with a note, for them to review, because in my opinion, I don't think anything is going to happen until Congress changes some laws to make it harder for these people. But that's just a different route. That's the route I'm going.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
It out there.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Talking to your representative.
Always an option. They help us with the education, and oftentimes they help their constituencies by then contacting us back and asking questions about some of the things that they're seeing as well. So keeping that communication open is always a good thing.
Peter in Hazelhurst, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi there, guys. Hey, I got a good one in the mail here the other day. It came in a envelope that has no return address. It's metered postage from Canada, and they're pleased to announce that I'm a $500,000 winner from some secondary international general market survey draw. And the really nice thing about it is they included a check for $8,890.90 to cover the taxes, insurance, shipping, and handling. Now, all I have to do is deposit the check, and they'll deliver. I kind of don't think it was all that. I mean, it smelled bad when I opened the envelope. Yeah. The phone number is from Area 902, which I believe is Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island. Their U.S. office is an unoccupied apartment in Houston, Texas.
Well, I hope you didn't cash that check. No, I'm sure you didn't cash that check. Jared, that would not be a good idea, would it?
No, that wouldn't be. At first, I wanted to congratulate him on his big win, but that's clearly not what's going on here. Peter's doing a lot of research, which I think is great, so he clearly sees this for what it is. There's a couple of different potential scams here to look out for. This has elements potentially of international lotteries, which is illegal to do by federal law, so that alone is something you don't want to be involved with. And then, you know, a variant on fake checks. If you get a check and someone asks you to cash it, that check is very likely to be fake, and that will make it your responsibility to the bank to pay it back. So if you ever get someone who sends you a check, and particularly if they say cash this and send a portion on to another party, that right there is the biggest red flag you're going to have, that you're going to get a ripoff right here.
Thanks for that call, Peter. Appreciate it. Sylvia in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Sylvia. Oh, let's go here. Maybe I pushed the wrong button. Sylvia, hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
I received a postcard in the mail. It says unclaimed reward, amount $100. It just has my last name on it, and it says they're holding $100 in savings as a member benefit. I've never heard of this place. There's two different phone numbers to call, and I don't intend to call them.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, I think. Isn't it, Michelle?
Sure seems like a good thing to me. There are a lot of different forms of rewards that are being sent, usually by text or by email, but they certainly come by mail, that if you claim this reward, there's going to be something on the other end. You don't usually get something for nothing. And here you're getting this rewards benefit, but what program is it? You know, all these questions come to mind. What are you being rewarded for? Handing over personal information, handing over financial information. You didn't enter anything. You don't belong to this rewards program that you initiated. So something out of the blue is certainly worth questioning and just putting in the shred pile.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Sylvia. Appreciate it. Mark in Three Lakes, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm 60-plus years old. I am computer illiterate, and I'm wondering how I can protect my investments and things that I have worked for my whole life.
Are you, you're computer illiterate, but are you on the computer and do you have?
No, I am not connected to anything.
Okay. Well, that's one way to help solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, it is. But I should say this, that one thing we learned from the data book, the FTC national data, is that of the complaints received, 70% said that the frauds came through by phone. So while we think most of the scams are coming with this technology and things, most still happen in a very traditional way, phone and mail. And a lot of the losses, 46% of the losses people reported, are still through wire transfer. So I think that this is a great call from Mark to say, I'm offline. How do I protect myself? One way to do that is you have a credit card. Work with your credit card company and set up fraud alerts, because those can come by phone. They don't have to be. And then the credit card company will contact you if they see strange activity. How you protect yourself: monitor your bills. Monitor them when they come. Open them, look through them, pay attention. he can still by phone order his credit report three times a year and monitor to make sure that there's no identity theft there. Once you get the report, you look at it, make sure that everything is legitimate. And then he can choose to either put a fraud alert on his credit report or a security freeze to lock down any new credit from happening. And then don't engage in phone calls and don't engage in false mailings that come your way. Just shred your documents and protect that information. Those are all really good ways to kind of protect himself, his financial future, and his credit there.
There we go. There we go. Thanks so much for calling. Jim emailed to say his mother was recently contacted by a company seeking to purchase her timeshare, and they wanted to meet with her at a Madison hotel and asked her to bring her deed. They also included a $10 coupon they could send to the charity of her choice. They pulled up their name on the Better Business Bureau, gave it an A+, but ripoffreport.com basically said they were not legit. Can you suggest any action that she should or shouldn't take on this? Wouldn't the original timeshare company be doing the connecting or the contacting, if at all?
If it comes to when timeshare resale, one thing to consider is, are you seeking to resell or is someone seeking to buy? And so how did you get connected? And yes, if you weren't thinking about selling it, but you're contacted by your legitimate time sale, your timeshare, that's going to be more reliable than someone out of the blue. But one thing we have concreted is don't pay money up front to resell your timeshare. That's going to be a really big indicator. The fact that, you know, we get kind of nervous about a lot of these hotel meetings and rewards that are enticement, this $10 coupon you're going to get for this presentation, that you have to bring the deed with you on site. Well, you want to take time and consider what the offer is, probably not take action in that moment in time. So, you know, BBB does ratings based on complaints. If this is something new, but it's circulated elsewhere and you're seeing other things, all things to question.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to Madani in Portage. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I have two questions, and one is for you. I will pose that to you first and then proceed with your guest. Okay, I live in Portage, and I listen to you. That comes from Wisconsin Rapids. On clear days, the Madison station, the music drowns you, and sometimes I can't even get you. And I wonder if something can be done with that. I'll just let you ponder about that, and I'll move on to the next one. Okay?
Yep, go ahead.
All right, so and for your guests, we have a restaurant, and I wonder how I can stop Google from calling at different times and want to sell us a better website.
All right, so lots of calls from Google wanting to sell a website.
Well, legitimate Google doesn't normally call, so it's likely a scam Google. But in case it were legitimate Google, you say, I do not want to receive phone calls. Where can I send my request to be on your do not call list? Businesses can write to an individual company and ask to be taken off the list, and then a company would need to abide by that. But if they don't give you an address, then it's not real Google.
And in terms of, I wish you would call our listener services number, because first, we're out of time, but second, they're more equipped to be able to handle us. So if you get the listener services number, which you can get online. I just don't have it right off the top of my head, unfortunately. Can't help you out here with that. And maybe we'll get it. Oh, it's 800-747-7444. 800-747-7444. Michelle Ryan and Jared Albrecht, they'll be back on May 3rd. We'll do this all over again. And thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store.